for inviting me to speak on this very important topic. I want to spend the next 10 minutes or so looking at the conflict and its coverage, how the coverage has changed over the last decade or so, and how that has helped change the conflict. I studied journalism for 4 years at City University, starting in 2003. That's about 15 years ago now, but it actually seems a lot longer. At that time in 2003, probably the fastest-paced news you were going to get was your 24-hour news TV station. So Sky News being the most established, privately owned company, of course, owned by Rupert Murdoch. Or there was BBC News 24, which at the time was relatively new. I think it was only about 4 or 5 years old. The daily routine for journalists was still that you would come in and there would be a pile of newspapers that you would read through. People still read newspapers. That was still a thing. And in 2003, Hi5 and MySpace launched. They were two social media platforms that probably anyone under the age of 30 has never heard of. They weren't news-centric at all. So that was the media world at the time, on the cusp of something phenomenal, but not really aware of the fact that it was. There was no such term as social media. We didn't study it. There was no course on it. It just simply didn't exist. As a London university, our journalism department was probably more diverse than others. So, but it was still predominantly white, especially the teaching staff. There were hardly any Muslims on the course. And that's pretty much reflective of the reality of the media in Britain anyway. City University itself has done a study that's found that British journalism is 94% white, 55% male, only 0.4% of British journalists are Muslim, only 0.2% are black. So that's where we were at. It was still very controlled, it was structured. Editorial still held the absolute control of the reins. Even when it decided to give an alternative point of view, it was in control. And the consequences, of course, of that on a topic such as Palestine was that it was incredibly difficult, if not near impossible, to find a way to penetrate the establishment storyline. And that's the way it was, and that's the way it had always been. In my last year of university, so this is 2006-2007, something called Twitter and something called Facebook launched. But what seemed widely more significant to the news media world at the time, something called Al Jazeera, something called Press TV launched. The advent of alternative media was for the news coverage of Palestine in the English-speaking world a watershed moment. The reign of control and that kind of enforced establishing of the spectrum that the news people could receive was from this goalpost to that goalpost, that changed. The goalpost was literally moved. And we saw that most significantly in 2009 when Israel went to war on Gaza. For 3 weeks, the relentless bombing left about 1,400 Palestinians and 13 Israelis dead. I was a news anchor at Press TV in Tehran at the time, and we, like Al Jazeera, had basically what was 24-hour rolling news coverage of the war. Very importantly, that included using Palestinian reporters inside Gaza and live-streaming footage from inside the Strip as well. What that meant was that for the first time, if you were at home in London or somewhere across Britain and you had a skybox and you were flicking through the news channels, you'd cross over to the BBC that probably had a very reserved news anchor talking probably to an Israeli official who was saying something about how they had to defend themselves against terrorists. But if you just flicked up two stations, you were suddenly met with chaotic scenes of children injured, homes rubble to the ground, bombs being relentlessly put in the air in the night sky, dead mothers, children, young people. And those two stories that people were seeing simply didn't add up. People started asking questions and they started questioning the coverage. The imbalance, as we all know, is often very obvious, but at other times it's subtly woven into the essence of the coverage. Study after study has found that there is a consistent underreporting of Palestinian deaths and overreporting of Israeli ones in that coverage. And that's basically across the board, whether it's here in Britain or in America. But just to give one example in stateside, in a one-month period in 2004, CBS News reported 202% of Israeli deaths and only 54% of Palestinian deaths. Literally, your death was worth the weight of two people if you were Israeli and half a person if you were Palestinian. This imbalance is also woven into the news wires themselves. So Associated Press has been found to report on Israeli deaths at a rate of 2 times greater than Palestinian deaths. And even when deaths are being reported, the prominence they are given is unbalanced. So in a period of 2013 that was monitored, AP gave headlines or first paragraph coverage to 9 Israeli children who had died, when there'd been 8 who had died in that period. They covered 27 of 179 Palestinian children who had died. Most of them weren't given headline or first paragraph prominence in those reports. It's also, of course, woven into the language of the coverage, so using terms such as disputed territories instead of occupied territory, or neighbourhood instead of settlement. And it's also the voices that you hear in the news as well, with study after study showing that Israeli commentators and figures are being given far more prominence. Here in Britain, an independent review commissioned by BBC governors found that their coverage gave a misleading picture by consistently failing to give a full and fair account of the conflict, and that it didn't convey the disparity in the Israeli and Palestinian experience, or the fact that one side was in control and the other side was living in occupation. But that is exactly what alternative media focused on, the lives of Palestinians under occupation. Now, in 2009, social media was popular, but it was still establishing itself as a news source. But by 2014, in the 2014 war on Gaza, that had all changed. Alternative media had been consistently putting more pressure on mainstream coverage, those two goalposts, but social media was now increasingly the news cycle. And mainstream outlets were either playing catch-up or ultimately being forced, however reluctantly, to concede space and coverage because of this virality of social media platforms, specifically Twitter. Imbalanced editorial in a newsroom used to dictate what we thought on a topic. Now, what we think on a topic is dictating the news cycle. So 14 days into the 2014 Gaza conflict, the hashtag Gaza under attack had been used over 4 million times. By comparison, the hashtag Israel under fire had been used 200,000 times, just as an example of that. Palestinians, including citizen and grassroots journalists, were getting information out instantly. And what was important was that even mainstream established journalists, who are now told in their jobs that they must live tweet as they go, were putting out information before it was being filtered through the editorial of the news bulletin. This new journalistic ecosystem showed yet again how faulty many of the old tools for judging media coverage actually are. The internet has made certain metrics, such as, for example, the placement of a story in a newspaper or a headline in a news bulletin, nearly irrelevant. So one example in 2014 that I remember was this heartbreaking story of the Israelis killing 4 boys on a Gaza beach. It was broken by a New York Times journalist, and they'd put it on page A7 of the paper. It wasn't given front page prominence on the website either. But in the internet age, that story flew around Twitter, it became viral, and it was widely shared. Even attacks that the mainstream media wouldn't pick up on at all are now breaking almost instantly online with photos and with video. And that's really evidence of a massive change in the balance of power between social media and the old hierarchical media channels we used to rely on to understand war. For many, this decades-long conflict can now be seen through the eyes of those who live it for the first time. That's why today we now have the plights of 16-year-old Fawzi al-Junaidi, or, for example, Ahed Tamimi making international news stories. These were, to begin with, unfiltered stories of brave, innocent young Palestinians that became viral by ordinary people, not journalists, sharing them, and they were forced onto the news agenda. That's also why now we have more article headlines like, why is Israel losing the media war on Palestine, or just declaring as a fact that it is. Or why during the 2014 war, Benjamin Netanyahu told CNN that Hamas is using the images of telegenically dead civilians to further damage Israel's public image, because he knows Israel's public image is damaged, and so is America's. Today, the election of Donald Trump has, of course, added an additional dynamic to this landscape, because whilst the world's media is a fan of Israel, they're not so much a fan of Donald Trump, bar maybe Fox News. So actually, the announcement on Jerusalem was met with quite a fair bit of scathing criticism. But while mainstream media has to balance what they're saying about Donald Trump or Jerusalem with their pro-Israeli position, whether it's an editorial or the owners or the journalists themselves, we don't have to do that. And Israel and the media, we need to remember, is continuing to lose that media war. While they do that, they are going to become more bitter and more irrational in trying to bring down individuals who support the Palestinian cause. Some of those people are here speaking with us today. We just heard from Ken. But what's important to remember is that is actually an indicator that they are failing, that they are losing, not that they are winning. And that's a really important point to remember. If anything, it should encourage us to speak out even more and to support those who are speaking out using these platforms. Justice, of course, won't come easily, but we have to remember that justice and the truth and the momentum, especially on this issue on media, is on our side. And that's the point I really want to end with, in the hope that just discussing through this trajectory and what is really a short period of time, how it has changed, and that actually when you reflect on that, it's a positive trajectory and the paradigm is changing. It's an important one to this struggle, and it's one now. You don't need to go to university for 4 years. You know, you can all take part in it as people online, using social media platforms, as citizen journalists, supporting prominent voices that are supporting the Palestinian cause. So I'll end it there. Thank you very much.